taking, you divide 4 into 12. Excuse me, 4 into 15. It goes 3 times and you have the remainder. So that remainder was then taken and divided into the pranas and the vihasas. It came from the same body as the original one Veda. And the Vedas themselves say it, the four Vedas, as well as the Puranas say it, the four Vedas say it, and describes it. So they're also Vedic. They're also Vedas. Now, modern scholars say something else. They say a lot of something else's. But Jiva Goswami's statement is, they're also Veda. They're of the same original one Veda that Vyasa divided before, and they compile the Sanskrit is different. He describes that. There's Laukika and Alaukika Sanskrit. But that's Vyasa's conversant in both, and he just it's not different meaning, it's just different language, it's different composition. And he says actually the Laukika Sanskrit is more accessible. It's easier to understand. There's less rules. It's more pleasing. So it's actually better. Anyway, and Srimad Bhagavatam is part of that. And so it also has these divisions. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur compiled, one of the last books that he wrote was Bhagavat Artha Marichimala, and he took the compendium of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam according to subject. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. And then different subjects that are subsets of those. So Srimad Bhagavatam has the same. Just like his Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Narada's getting the understanding of what is the greatest recipient, who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. And Gopakumar is receiving the greatest mercy of the Lord. And Narada helping him along the way, but he says, I'm not eligible to receive that which Gopakumara is eligible to receive. Not just Gyan. Abhideya Gyan and Prayojana Gyan. He's experiencing. So that's what Srimad Bhagavatam does. That other portions of the Vedas don't have the capacity to deliver. Yeah.
When the Brahmin, Janakarma was given the Madan Bhokhan Mantra, so he was having material desire. So do you make any effort to get rid of the desire or just by chanting the mantra?
In his particular case, I don't think you should interpolate. In his particular case, the mantra had its effect, even without his desire to get rid of it. You know, his purposeful rejection of material desire. The mantra had that efficacy, just on its own. Like the verse that's there in Srimad Bhagavatam, akama sarvakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena. So if one engages in very determined devotional service, what happens? Same outcome if one has all material desires, no material desires, but the desire for liberation, and that is, one becomes free from material desires. They're more direct and more circuitous routes to get there. it stands to reason for a thoughtful person that if that's the objective, then why should I maintain these material desires? It then becomes like Dhruva Maharaj, where he pursued Tivrena Bhakti Yogena with big, big, big time material desires. And when he achieved the fulfillment of Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, he was totally embarrassed. And yet had to undergo very long duration of having the fruit of those material desires to deal with in the mood of detached devotion. Big kingdom.
As you mentioned that King Kamsa was also always remembering Krishna, but in a particular way. Did he receive deliverance from Krishna?
Deliverance by Krishna? He achieved, yes. He didn't achieve the same destination as Putana, but he was completely free from his material condition of life by was being killed by Krishna as Putana did. But Putana, actually I can't recall exactly what the outcome of Kamsa was, but he Putana approached in the mood of mother, or in the role, I should say, of mother. And that was sufficient to give her spiritual destination after her life as Putana. Was she achieved the position of one of the confidential associates of Mother Jasoda in the spiritual world, in Vatsalya Ras. And Kamsa, I was just reading this, and I can't recall some detail about Kamsa's position. He was inimical toward Krishna, but at the same time, and always thinking of Krishna. So he was thinking of Krishna in a bad way. But he also had great admiration for Krishna. He recognized his beauty. He recognized his strength. He had deep appreciation for Krishna's capacity. And that, I can't recall the detail now, but that also Krishna accepted. There was some special situation given for Kamsa just because of that slight recognition of Krishna. I can't recall the detail. Something else? Okay. I want to mention the schedule for tomorrow. What I heard from you. So we'll continue with Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Nectar, just selecting what slice of the nectar to read from. We discussed how Brihad Bhagavatamrita is, in one sense, a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, in another sense, literally, it's an addendum to Mahabharata. It's Maharaj Parikshit's summary in essence of everything that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami, the first part was who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, and the conclusion of that was the residents of Vrindavan. And here we are in Vrindavan, at least for visitors in Vrindavan, hearing every day, again and again, about wonderful pastimes that take place between Radha and Krishna, and Krishna the cowherd boys, and Krishna and Mother Jasoda, and Krishna and Govardhan Hill. So, the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy are the residents of Vrindavan. Out of all entities in all material and spiritual creation. So, hearing this, Uttara, Janamejoya wants to hear more, and that's presented by Jaimini Rishi by telling more in terms of the same question asked by Uttara. She wanted to know, since the residents of Vrindavan are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy, they must have a very special residence as this fit recipients. And to illustrate this, she indicates that there are different persons who have degrees of spiritual qualification, and her explanation is reminiscent of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami, as we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where from the very beginning of Lord Chaitanya's instructions, he outlines the totality of living entities, and some of those living entities are submitting themselves to the Vedas, otherwise they're unregulated in their lives altogether. And of those who submit themselves to the Vedas, go through different gradations. And does the same thing, up and up and up and up and up and up, to the highest stages of rasa that is outlined in Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami, what we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's paralleled here in this part two. So Uttara says, similarly, there are persons who are religious and there's persons who are irreligious. And amongst those persons who are religious, mostly they're interested in their immediate gratifications on the material plane, or maybe a little above that is future gratifications on the material plane. And of those, very few are those who are interested in diminishing their material involvement and becoming more situated on the spiritual platform. And amongst those, very rare to find one who actually achieves the spiritual platform. And amongst those, very rare to find someone who wants to revive their relationship with the Supreme Lord. And amongst those, very rare is it to find those who actually achieve that position. And amongst those, it's very rare to find one who is not simply attracted by the glamour or the opulences of the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. So in his commentary, Sanatana Goswami outlines what he describes as 4.5 types of bhaktas, which we'll go through. And the half of a bhakta is the jnana bhakta, just as Rupa Goswami's definition is there. That uttam bhakti, or bhakti, it means pure devotion. And pure devotion is characterized by becoming disinterested in karma and jnana. So the first on the list that is jnana bhaktas. So see if I can stir everybody's after lunch mental powers a little bit. and see if you can identify as Sanatana Goswami does. Who are examples? Come this way, if you can. Slide around. Who are examples of Jnana Bhaktas? Is one very obvious example, and perhaps one less obvious example.
Maitreya
Muni. That would be appropriate. He was a devotee, but he was, until he met, or until he heard the conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, he was attracted primarily to accumulation of knowledge. Very good. Very good example. Another?
Or tomorrow's.
Obvious example. There's one that's less obvious. That, Uddhava? No. I'll give you a clue. Uddhava doesn't even fit in. He's in another category. Oh, he's in the final category. So we'll just exclude Uddhava from here on to get to the final category. Sanatana Goswami offers Bharat Maharaj. He's extremely knowledgeable and very, very fixed in the principles of bhakti, and he achieved a very, very high stage of bhakti, but there was still some lingering attachment for less than pure transcendental understanding and realization. Then, so I'll give the names of them. Shuddha Bhaktas, this is the half, Jnana Bhaktas. Shuddha Bhaktas, Prema Bhaktas, Prema Para Bhaktas, and Prema Atura Bhaktas. So Uddhava is in that final category. So we'll go now. Shuddha Bhaktas, persons who very, very strictly follow the principles and practices of devotional service, and by that strict following become pure in their devotion. Shuddha Bhaktas. So the distinction here is the next category is Prema Bhaktas. So Sanatana Goswami suggests Ambarish Maharaj. Those of you that are here from Chicago can remember our discussions on Ambarish Maharaj. And he was unflinching in his devotion. There was no trace of material affinity in his life, in his heart. And he meticulously followed all the procedures of practices of devotion in a very, very glorious way. So he's Shuddha Bhakta. And then Prema Bhakta. Who can you think of who stands out as being very, very, not just fixed in practices, but filled with love for the Lord? Prahlad Maharaj? Okay. He comes, according to Sanatana Goswami, he comes in the next category. Well, no, Prahlad Maharaj is fine. Prahlad Maharaj. Whatever is in the last category. Yeah, last. He didn't get there yet. Hanuman. because of deep love for his Lord, who is the object of his worship, of Prahlad and Hanuman. And even more confidential, so that if you can think back, those of you that have heard this Brihat Bhagavatamrita, this follows the same line of, you could say, transcendental hierarchy. As Rupa Goswami says, the nectar devotion is perfect, more perfect and most perfect in the spiritual realm. So, prema para bhakti. Who did Hanuman refer Narada to? The Pandavas. Because as far as Hanuman is concerned, they're always receiving the Lord's association. It's in so many ways. Very, very, very confidential in their dealings and exchanges. He acts as their cousin. He's so intimately involved in their lives. And as far as the Pandavas are concerned, even above them, Prema, Artura, Bhakta, who fits in that category? There's Uddhava. But Uddhava and all of the members of the Yadu dynasty, because Krishna resides there and Dwaraka with them. And as far as the abode of the Supreme Lord, which he manifests for the performance of his pastimes, we include these three: Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwaraka. So in that realm of Dwaraka, Uddhava is topmost. So what Uttara is wondering is that even amongst these Shuddha Bhaktas, we can say by this analysis, there are four divisions, and one might consider even other types of divisions besides these four divisions, but with degrees of intensity of intimacy and confidential dealings, because still in this Prema Artura Bhaktas, which is in the realm of Dwaraka, it still doesn't include Mathura and Vrindavan. So the reasoning is that although they're each of these categories, they're pure in their devotion, but there are qualitative differences even amongst them. Now, would it make sense, Uttara reasons, that all these different personalities would just be mixed in one homogeneous blur in one spiritual realm? But if there are differing degrees of achieving the mercy of the Lord, are there not different abodes where these recipients of the mercy of the Lord reside? And then, of course, the other question is how to attain that mercy and that residence. So stepping back from that question, this is one of the disclosures of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's one of the primary subject matters, of course. Just for the noise factor. It's one of the primary subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam: how to achieve the full mercy of the Lord, what is the full mercy of the Lord, and what is the, as Uttara is asking, in what way does that manifest in one's life? Where does one reside, and what is life like there in that residence? So that's answered by Maharaj Parikshit by narrating the story of the Brahmana. And then in turn the Brahmana meets Gopakumar, and so Gopakumar tells his story. And we ended up the other day with Gopakumar hearing from both, so there's three persons in this dialogue, or or three-way discussion. And that's Narada Muni, who appears throughout the first and the second part. He's accompanying Gopukumara throughout so many of the different steps. He's assisting the devotees to achieve the ultimate goal of life as the bearer of the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. Narada defers again and again. He knows the heart of Gopukumara, and he wants to see the fulfillment of his heart's desire, but he feels that Uddhava is far more qualified than he is to disclose that.